30-month sentencing was severe and made a judgment, a considered judgment, that I believe is the right decision to make in this case.
Good evening, Truth Seeker. Mike Malloy here on Independence Day Eve, coming to you via the Nova M Radio Network. Thank you very much for joining the program tonight. Thanks for tuning in. We will be covering in depth tonight the constitutional crisis that is rapidly approaching this country, and as a result of so much of what the Bush crime family has perpetrated against the American public. But most recently, of course, the commutation of Irving Lewis Libby's sentence for four counts of perjury and obstruction of justice. We'll get to that. The decider, you see, has spoken, and Dark Lord Cheney's chief minion will not step foot in jail. Well, maybe he will, though. So we have a couple of moron sounds for you this evening, plus a whole mess of Foxy the Snowman. Tony Snow's extremely contentious briefing today that you will hear excerpts from in just a few minutes. The White House press didn't let up on this very sick man who looks like he needs to join Michael Moore on a trip to Cuba for some immediate medical attention. Someplace. Come on, Tony. It's obvious you don't have much time left. Why you want to spend it standing there lying for the most corrupt regime ever to rule America is way beyond me. But first, I have a correction I have to make on something I said last night. At some point in the program last night, I referred to Americans United for Separation of Church and State, a statement that they released, as an atheist organization. And in the state of mind I was in last night, that's my only excuse. I just didn't have a connect between my brain and my mouth. The Americans United for Separation of Church and State is not an atheist organization at all. As a matter of fact, the head of it is a Reverend Barry Lynn. But I got a letter from Barbara Forrest. She writes, "Hi, Mike. I'm a fan and member of the Nova M Founders Club. I am the philosophy professor who emailed a while back to say that I love your show when you were worried that not enough people were signing up as founders. I made a point of listening to your show last night to get your response to Bush's commutation of Libby's sentence, and I'm listening to it again this morning. I would like to make a correction, though, to your statement that Americans United for Separation of Church and State is, quote, an atheist organization that I deeply respect," end quote. I love the deeply respect part, but we are not an atheist organization. We represent people of all faiths and people of none in matters of church and state separation. For example, I am a non-believer, and Barry Lynn, our executive director, is an ordained minister in the United Church of Christ. We have staff of different religious persuasions, and our members cover the entire spectrum of religious belief as well as non-belief. Our policy is to respect people of all faiths and people of none, while protecting the First Amendment right to believe as one chooses without government interference or sponsorship. I am a devoted fan. I share your outrage about what is happening to our country, but religious people are not the enemy. The people who would use religion as a weapon, and they are a vocal and well-organized minority, are those at whom we should aim our efforts. Americans United would not be able to do that effectively if we were an atheist organization. By the way, Americans United played a role in the 2005 intelligent design creationism trial that originated in Dover, PA. I was one of the expert witnesses for the plaintiffs in the case, which we won. Our plaintiffs were good Christian people in the best sense of the word, and they have only the highest respect for the separation of church and state. Keep up the good work, Mike and Kathy. You're a welcome channel for righteous outrage. Sincerely, Barbara Forrest. And thanks for writing, Barbara, and thanks for the calm way you pointed out the glaring error that I made last night. I don't know why I did that, Kathy. I have no idea. I have quoted, how many times have I quoted Barry Lynn in Americans United for Americans United is the shorthand form for separation of church and state. So, mea culpa of the most enormous degree, and we won't let that happen again. Regarding the Cheney, Libby, Bush plane affair, for how many years now? How long has this been going on? It seems like forever. That Bush has said regarding this mess, let the system work, let the evidence be presented, let the legal system decide, right? Well, all that happened. And when you think about how many press representatives, was it two or was it all three in the Bush crime family, who stood out there and refused to comment on an ongoing criminal investigation? Remember all that nonsense and horse hockey? Huh? All of it happened. The system worked its way all the way up to a trial, a verdict, a sentencing, and the assignment of an inmate number. And at that point, Bush treated that very legal system as a whore. Or did he treat it as a pimp? One of the two. In much the same way, he dangles the promise of democracy in front of people desperate for self-rule, and then, like Lucy in the Peanuts comic strip, he pulls the promise away when democracy turns out to be Hamas or some other entity not to his liking, just like the verdict and the sentence in the Libya affair. Joe Wilson got it right again last night on Keith Olbermann's program. Bush is now a co-conspirator in a clear case of obstruction of justice. Quick note to Ms. Pelosi and Mr. Reid, is that an impeachable offense? I doubt it. Meanwhile, today, in order to cover his ass, George Bush did what he always does. He ran to hide behind wounded American veterans. He ran to Walter Reed Hospital to hand out Purple Hearts and to talk about how it moves his soul to see the people he is maiming, to see the people he has consigned to a lifetime of crippling effects of his filthy war and occupation. There he was, George W. Bush, hiding once again behind wounded American veterans. What a scumsucker. What a low-rent punk. My God. We'll have a couple of comments after Bush gave his little talk, hiding behind wounded vets. There was some press there, and he said, I'll take two of your questions. And sure enough, both of the questions to Chuckle Nuts were about his pardon of Louis Libby, his commutation of Louis Libby's sentence. So we'll get to all that tonight. Tonight it's going to be kind of a rough ride, so fasten your seatbelt. Over in Alabama, Governor Bob Riley, the Republican thug who assisted Karl Rove, or was it vice versa, in removing Don Siegelman and sending him to jail because Don Siegelman was a Democrat. Governor Bob Riley, a couple of days ago, issued a proclamation calling for a week of prayer, a week that we are in right now, a prayer for rain. because there is none falling in Alabama. Governor Bob encouraged Alabamians to pray, quote, individually and in their houses of worship, end quote. He said, throughout our history, Alabamians have turned in prayer to God to humbly ask for his blessings and to hold us steady during times of difficulty. This drought is without question a time of great difficulty. A prepared statement included endorsements on this week of prayer from the Alabama Farmers Federation and the Alabama Farmers Market Authority. Hallelujah. Roger McNeil, a hydrologist with the National Weather Service in Birmingham, said a weak front will push its way into Alabama, triggering some showers in the next couple of days, but the showers won't be enough to put a dent in the drought. Mr. McNeil declined to say whether he thinks prayer can make it rain. He said, quote, I don't think it's ever hurt. By the way, intercessory prayer, you know, prayer to address specific issues, has been in the news because of some studies of its effectiveness. And the largest study financed by the Templeton Foundation and published in the American Heart Journal last year followed 1,800 patients at six hospitals. What happened was Christian groups prayed for some of the patients from the day before heart surgery and for 2 weeks after, and did not pray for others. According to an AP account of the study, the patients were divided into three groups: those who knew they were being prayed for, those who were prayed for but knew only it was a possibility, and those who weren't prayed for and were never told it was a possibility. The study found there was no effect of prayer on patients' recoveries. And a much smaller study, financed in part by the National Institute of Health in 1998, had Christians, Buddhists, Jews, and Indian shamans pray for patients in the advanced stages of AIDS. That study found that the AIDS patients who were prayed for were in better health than those for whom no one prayed to begin with. The Reverend Barry Lynn, director of the Americans United for Separation of Church and State, said state proclamations for National Day of Prayer and other broad non-denominational religious observances are fairly common, but government calls for intercessory-type prayers, Reverend Lynn said, are rare. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour. By the way, we let this go by last night. 4 years ago, yesterday, President Chucklenuts issued this challenge to the Iraqi insurgents. He said, "There are some who feel like that the conditions are such that they can attack us there. My answer is bring them on." And on July 3rd, 2003, or July 2nd, 2003, just over 200 U.S. soldiers had died in Iraq. Today, the number stands at 3,586. In July of 2003, the Gallup organization reported that the number of Americans who believed things were going badly in Iraq had risen to 42%, up from 29% the month before. Today, almost 80% of the American public believe the war, the occupation, is going badly. This afternoon, Americans Against Escalation in Iraq, Move On, Vote Vets, and other groups gather at the White House to remind Bush of his blunder. Vote Vets Chairman John Saltz, an Iraq war veteran, writes about yesterday's anniversary. He says, "If there's anything positive that can come of it, let it be that on the blogs and in the media we take today to recognize that 4 years ago, the president proved just how out of touch he was with those of us in the military. Let us remember that since then, there's been many more bring it on days, and recognize that if we are ever to protect our troops and save our military, Congress absolutely must step in and rein in this inept and dangerous president who continually proves he doesn't get it." 4 years ago. Now, it's one thing to not have the courage in the Democratic Party leadership in Congress to begin impeachment proceedings against this unconscionable murdering bastard. It's something else, again, that it takes a Republican to introduce a bill aimed at reining in Bush's ability to modify laws to his whim. It's a Republican, Pennsylvania Senator Arlen Specter, who has called Bush's abuse of the signing statements, quote, an unconstitutional attempt to usurp legislative authority, end quote. And he introduced his Presidential Signing Statements Act of 2007 this last Friday, according to Roll Call. Specter said on the floor of the Senate, according to roll call, quote, the president cannot use a signing statement to rewrite the words of a statute, nor can he use a signing statement to selectively nullify those provisions he does not like, end quote. The Government Accountability Office found several weeks back that in several cases, this corrupt, filthy administration did not execute laws as Congress had intended after Bush attached a signing statement to them. Specter, according to roll call, said, quote, this is a finely structured constitutional procedure that goes straight to the heart of our system of checks and balances. Any action by the president that circumvents this finely structured procedure is an unconstitutional attempt to usurp legislative authority. If the president is permitted to rewrite the bills that Congress passes and cherry pick which provisions he likes and does not like, he subverts the constitutional process designed by our framers, end quote. Is that an impeachable offense? And if not, Ms. Pelosi and Mr. Reid, what is? Bob Kincaid at headonradio.com has an excellent idea about how to get Scooter Libby into jail. You got to hear this right after we come back from the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
There are some who feel like that, you know, the conditions are such that they can attack us there. My answer is bring them on. It wasn't all that long ago that we started military operations. We've been there, what, how many days? Are you counting the days since we've been there? Because I'm not.
You filthy, filthy man. This breaking news, I think this has just happened within the past hour. So the BBC's correspondent, Alan Johnston, who has been held for about 4 months by people within the Palestinian territories, has been freed from kidnappers in Gaza. The BBC says Mr. Johnson was handed over to officials of Hamas and then released during his time as a hostage. Three videos were released featuring images of Mr. Johnson or of his belongings. Calls were made for his release in rallies worldwide. And in an online petition signed by some 200,000 people. So within the past few minutes, information that the BBC reporter has been freed. Now, Bob Kincaid at headonradio.com sent me an email last night. It said, Mike, it's a long shot, but a few thousand letters to the judge, the Honorable Reggie B. Walton, suggesting that he revoke Scooter's probation might be a nice touch. Scooter's probation was, after all, expressly exempted from the commutation. What constitutes a probation violation is largely a matter of a judge's prerogatives, after all, and I'll bet Judge Walton's prerogative is stinging pretty badly right now. Those judicial egos are mighty sensitive. Maybe he'd like to see Dim Sun thwart his will twice. Judge Walton's mailing address is easily Googled. It's too long to try to give out on the air. I'll be posting a blog entry at headonradionetwork.com, headonradionetwork.com, to explain the process and provide the mailing address. While likely fruitless, it's valuable to do something. As long as we're not going to march in Washington and pull a Ceausescu, we can at least write a letter or two. Not surprised, just disgusted. Bob, that's a good idea. And Bush has made as clear a statement as he's capable of making by saying that the only part of the sentence he found to be excessive was the prison time. But I like Bob's idea, because if this judge does get his judicial robes in a wad over this and does revoke the probation, then the only way Bush can prevent this smarmy, slimy bastard Lewis Libby from going to prison is to fully pardon him. Which is probably the reason today he said all options are still on the table. Maybe he got confused and thought the reporter was talking about dropping nuclear bombs on Iran. Don't know. From Institute for Public Accuracy, a couple of quotes here. In a statement about commutation, Bush said, I've concluded that the prison sentence given to Mr. Libby is excessive. Okay. How about Kevin Benderman? You know who he is. Kevin Benderman said today, quote, I was imprisoned for 14 months after trying to apply for conscientious objector status after seeing the reality of the Iraq War, end quote. He's beginning a speaking tour with his wife, Monica. Their book, Letters from a Fort Lewis Brig, is forthcoming later this year. Monica Benderman said today, quote, parole was denied to Kevin because he had not been, quote, sufficiently rehabilitated, end quote. What were they rehabilitating him from? Not wanting to go to war? During those 14 months, Kevin would be sitting in a plastic chair getting shouted at. He was denied his mail at times. They tried to prevent his talking to his attorney and our member of Congress. Meanwhile, Libby, who covered up the truth on issues of war that affected the lives of people like my husband, is going to walk away. Margaret Colgate Love. She was United States pardon attorney in the Justice Department from 1990 to 1997. In an op-ed, she wrote, quote, it's important to remember the hundreds of ordinary people who have been patiently standing in line, some for many years, waiting for presidential forgiveness. Bush has been more sparing in his exercise of the constitutional pardon power than any president in the last 100 years, including his own father. He has pardoned only 113 people in more than 6 years in office and denied more than 1,000 pardon applications. He has granted only 3 of more than 5,000 requests for sentence reduction from federal prisoners. Many hundreds of applications remain to be acted on. Many of those with pending applications for clemency were convicted long ago of garden variety crimes and have fully served their time. Many others are still serving lengthy, mandatory prison terms from which there is no hope of parole. Mark Maurer, executive director of the Sentencing Project, said today, quote, if President Bush truly believes that the power of commutation is necessary to correct injustice, there is no shortage of cases of people languishing in federal prisons for unconscionably lengthy sentences who are deserving of such attention. These include many of the nearly 100,000 people serving time for a drug offense, most of whom were sentenced under the one-size-fits-all mandatory sentencing laws that apply even to first-time and low-level offenses. The president could also lend his political support to efforts to eliminate the sentencing disparity between crack cocaine and powder cocaine, a 21-year-old policy which discriminates against African Americans and has had no effect on drug abuse. And Elizabeth de la Vega, who served as a federal prosecutor in Minneapolis and San Jose for more than 20 years, she's the author of the book U.S. versus George W. Bush et al., she said today, quote, yes, the president has the constitutional power to commute sentences, but in this case, where the defendant whose sentence he is commuting is his former top advisor, and where both the president and the vice president are implicated in the same investigation that led to the charges against that advisor, the president's exercise of that prerogative is an egregious abuse of power. The judge imposed a sentence in accordance with the sentencing guidelines. Indeed, it was the most lenient sentence available under the applicable guideline range. Yet Bush, with no explanation whatsoever, has arbitrarily deemed the sentence excessive and obliterated it. Ah. Well, the list of people who are righteously protesting what this thug has done continues to grow. And of all the protests I've seen so far, I certainly like Bob Kincaid's the best. As far as affecting some sort of remedial action, Bob Kincaid at headonradionetwork.com, the idea of sending letters, not emails, not phone calls, letters. Do federal judges still open letters? Asking that Libby's probation be revoked. Throw the son of a bitch in jail and then let Bush pardon him and then see what happens, huh? And Giuliani, most of these Republican leeches who have attached themselves to something. The Republican Party doesn't exist anymore. There is a shell of the Republican Party. But really, Giuliani, who brags of being tough on crime, when he was an attorney, a prosecuting attorney, prosecuted perjury cases. And back then wanted mandatory sentences on people who commit perjury. That was one of Giuliani's claims to fame when he was, quote, cleaning up New York City, cleaning up New York State, cleaning up the federal prosecutorial system, making sure that the bad guys went to jail, mandatory sentences on people who commit perjury. But yesterday, yesterday, in support of Scooter Libby, he said, quote, I believe the president's decision was correct. Really? Mitt Romney, who as governor of Massachusetts never granted a single pardon, even for the most trivial offense, said he would consider pardoning Libby. Romney said, quote, it's worth looking at that. I will study it very closely if I'm lucky enough to be president, and I'd keep that option open. End quote. And yesterday he blamed Fitzgerald, the prosecutor, and completely ignored the jury, saying, quote, the prosecutor knew that there had not been a crime committed, end quote. What the hell is wrong with these people? There had not been a crime committed? Then what did the jury find the man guilty of? What did the judge, why did the judge sentence him? God, these people, they piss me off to such a massive degree because they think that the rest of us are as blind, deaf, and dumb as they are. And Fred Thompson, the lobbyist, movie star, who wants to be president, the ultimate Washington insider, who helped raise mucho dollars as the chair or a chair of Libby's Legal Defense Fund, he said, well, I reached out to Libby and offered to help. I called him up and offered to help him. He also said he would issue a pardon if he were president and claimed that Libby's conviction was a gross injustice and it ought to be rectified. You law and order freaks on the Republican Party, there's what your boys are saying tonight, huh?
Taxes, you're going to have tax relief. The government ought not to pay favors. It seems to make a fair way to me to make policy.
Ten before the hour, let's bring Bush on stage here for just a second as he went to Walter Reed today to hide behind the broken bodies of American soldiers, broken bodies that he insisted on producing. I don't know why the soldiers there don't resist his filthy presence. He destroys whatever honor these soldiers have. He shames them by even showing up. He shames them. But there he went today, as he always does, when there's pressure. He runs to hide behind the U.S. military. Always. So after further insulting these abused and maimed troops he created with one of his infamous slap-happy horse crap pep talks about freedom and democracy, Chicken Hawk Chuckle Nuts answered two questions from the press who wanted to talk about that commutation of the sentence of one of Darth Cheney's minions. This reporter said, "Mr. President, are you willing to rule out that you will eventually pardon Mr. Libby?"
I, first of all, I had to make a very difficult decision. I weighed this decision carefully. I thought that the jury verdict should stand. I felt the punishment was severe. So I made a decision that would commute his sentence, but leave in place a serious fine and probation. As to the future, I'm, rule nothing in and nothing out.
I can't stand it. I just can't stand it. Why don't you resign, you scum sucker? Why don't you just resign? If Nancy Pelosi won't allow members of her caucus to begin impeachment proceedings against you, trust me on this, Chuckle Nuts, that's not an endorsement of your policies. Why don't you just resign and take this miserable son of a bitch, Dick Cheney, with you? Why don't you do that, George? Why don't you show the American public that, in fact, you do have a shred of decency about you? Why don't you get out of town? Just leave. The next reporter points out the hypocrisy of Raisin Brain's claim that Libby's sentence was too severe, asking, "Mr. President, federal sentencing guidelines call for jail time in these kinds of cases, of perjury and obstruction of justice. Why do you feel otherwise? And are you worried that this decision sends a signal that you won't go to jail if you lie to the FBI?"
I took this decision very seriously on Mr. Libby.
See, he's not going to answer.
I considered his background, his service to the country, as well as the jury verdict.
Answer the question.
I felt like the jury verdict ought to stand.
Answer.
And I felt like some of the punishments that the judge determined were adequate should stand.
Answer the question.
But I felt like the 30-month sentencing was severe.
It's in the guidelines.
A considered judgment that I believe is the right decision to make in this case. And I stand by it.
Yeah, all Chuckle Nuts can stand by is Cheney's carefully crafted talking points. Get out there today, Junior, and say exactly what I've written down for you on this little notepad. Memorize it before you go hide behind the broken bodies of the soldiers. Memorize it. Memorize it, George. So that when some reporter wants to question your wisdom, you'll have an answer. Memorize it, George. Then go hide behind the broken bodies. But memorize it first. Oh, my God, this is disgusting. I feel dirty just talking about this guy. Let's do a phone call very quickly here. Dan is calling from Minnesota, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Dan.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good, good. Hey, the reason I called is, I know we've got a Congress that doesn't have any intestinal fortitude, and they're apparently devoid of leaders. Why couldn't we just go to the proposition where congressional leaders could approach and ask him, Bush, how much money he would take to resign? Give him the money. Our country would be well ahead. I don't care if we gave him $10 billion.
Right.
And then, by the way, then after we got the money, about two shakes after that, the Congress could pass a special law that would apply to taxation that would just apply to George Bush. And we'll tax it all away.
I like it, but... I like it, but on the other hand, Dan, who am I? Who are you? Right?
Well, I hear you, but I look at our country. We're dying. It's funny. We all talk about singly each event as whether it be an impeachable offense.
Right.
Nobody's looking at the totality of it. We're dying a death of 1,000 cuts with this guy.
That's right.
And somebody, if we look at each event and say, oh, that's not impeachable, and that's not impeachable, well, what is it after, what we've had? A couple of dozen major events that all would by me, and I guess I'm prejudiced in this, but each of them would be merit impeachment.
Sure.
And now to total them up and say they don't, I mean, we've got to be smoking dope.
or worse.
Or worse.
I hear you, Dan. I hear you. I mean, everything you say is absolutely valid. There's no debate. Thanks, Dan.
You're welcome.
All right, take it easy. Drive safely. It sounds like you're driving, so drive safely. All right, we're going to break here. When we come back, I want you to hear poor old Tony Snow, a man who is dying before our eyes, a man who is dealing with metastasized cancer that is eating its way completely through his body, and yet, for some reason, he stands out there every single day and lies and deceives and spins for this filthy administration who, when the time comes, will flick him aside like an empty cicada shell. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. It's about 7 past the hour. Let's take a few calls here very quickly before we play the clips we have from today's White House press briefing. Let's start with Michael, who is calling from Arkansas, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How you doing? I listen to you all the time, and your show is great. I just think it's disgusting, the situation that's going on, and I guess I'm posing a question to you a little bit more than a statement to see what you think. Does he have to appear before the same judge for the appeal? And if so,
no.
Can that judge say, all right, we heard your appeal, now we're going to reduce your sentence from 30 months to 15 months?
Let me try to answer it here in pieces. No, he will not appear in front of the same judge. He'll go to an appeals court, and then there's a whole system of appeals. If he appeals to an appellate court, and only three of, usually only a few of the judges who sit on that court will listen to the appeal. If those three judges, let's say it's three, rule against him, then his lawyers can refile and ask for a full hearing of the full court. If they still turn him down and uphold the sentence, then he can move on up through the federal, I believe he has another level to go to, and maybe not, but it is not the same court. Now, the second part of your question, what was the second part?
I just wondered if there was a way that they could reduce his sentence on an appeal where...
Sure, they could.
Bush would either have to pardon or commute him again, which would mean that he'd have to do that same thing twice, which would doubly infuriate the American public that has their head on their shoulders.
Right. Once the sentence has been commuted by presidential directive, the part of the sentence that was commuted is no longer reviewable because it's no longer there. Bush has removed the prison sentence. So the only thing that will be appealed now, Bush let stand the guilty verdict. And he also let stand the probation and the several hundred thousand dollar fine. So what will be appealed is the guilty verdict, not the sentence. The sentence is beside the point. What they're trying to do, what his attorneys are trying to do, is to get the whole thing reversed and have Irving Libby declared not guilty on by having it reversed in the appellate court. But once Bush has tampered with the sentence, that piece, it's like it has disappeared. So there's nothing.
I just wondered if there was a way to get this man into jail for even a little amount of time, but apparently.
Well, Michael, a friend of ours at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, Bob Kincaid, had a great suggestion, and that would be, well, it's an observation, really. If the judge who sentenced him, who went by federal guidelines, who is a Bush appointee, who said that this what Libby was convicted of was serious enough to warrant his going to jail immediately while his appeals were being handled, if that judge feels that his courtroom was invaded, now remember, he's in the judicial branch of government, if he feels that his courtroom was invaded egregiously by the executive branch, he just might turn around and say, all right, you took away the 30-month sentence, I'm going to revoke the probation part. Now, I don't know how much probation he was sentenced to. He might have been sentenced to a $200,000 fine, 30 months to serve, and 5 years probation. All Bush removed was the 30 years to serve, I believe. So if the judge says, well, you think you've gotten away, you think you can depend on your buddies in the executive branch, then here, let me revoke your the probation, go to jail, go directly to jail. Now, if that happens, then Bush would have to issue a full pardon, and that would still keep him out of prison. But Bush has said, and I think that's the reason, although Bush has said he would not pardon, I think that's the reason today he said a pardon is still on the table.
Yeah, but I heard that the probationary period was 2 years. You know, I just wondered, because this absolutely makes me sick.
Sure, it does.
This president is tearing up the fabric of the United States as far as our Constitution, Bills of Rights, and everything else. It's a shameful act, and it just appears to be nothing that we can do about it.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, there is nothing we the people can do about it, because this administration has placed itself outside the parameters of government of, for, and by the people. There's absolutely nothing we can do. Our Democratic Party leaders will not impeach this bastard and try to get him out of office. All we can do is try to hold on until the next election and remove him that way. I don't know what else to do unless people want to take to the streets, and I think people have demonstrated, so to speak, that they don't want to take to the streets.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks, Michael. I appreciate you checking in. Take care, okay?
Thank you, Mike.
All right. By the way, did I mention yet tonight, no, not how much I hate these people, but that Sam Cedar will be filling in for me on this program next Thursday, Thursday week, not Thursday coming this week, but next Thursday while I'm traveling to Seattle for an event sponsored by KTPK, our Seattle affiliate. So Sam Cedar will be sitting in, and Sam has an enormous fan base, so you folks who our fans of Sam Cedar's, get the word out, okay? Next Thursday night, the 12th, he'll be filling in for me. And tomorrow night, while Kathy and I and the kid are enjoying some fireworks here in the North Georgia Hills, provided they go off and don't cause enormous roaring forest fire, the network will be playing a best of. Pre-recorded program, not pre-recorded, but already listened to. What the hell am I saying? Well, huh? A rebroadcast. Thank you, Kathy. It's not best of. All right, let's go to the White House briefing today with Tony Snow, a man who's desperately ill, and I feel sorry for him, his physical condition, and I don't mean that in a patronizing way. I lost a family member to colon cancer, and I know what is going on, not specifically with Tony Snow, but certainly the way this disease progresses. And it is clear, very clear, that Tony Snow is suffering the final stages of this disease. And yet each day he's out there spreading the lies and deceit and the BS, and he's starting to lose some of the ability to fight these reporters. And I don't know. I still wish that the reporters would just stay away from the press briefings on the basis of two definite facts. All they're going to get is lies, and Tony Snow is a very sick man and should be in hospice someplace or with his family, preparing them and himself for his death. But there he is today. While Manor Monkey was pandering to the wounded and shot up troops at Walter Reed, this other severely ill man, Foxy the Snowman, was holding a press briefing that also focused on the strange commutation of Cheney's number one thug. Reporters didn't give him a break today, despite his ashen appearance. And if you see Tony Snow on television, it's very clear that he is he's in bad shape. This reporter asked about Dark Lord Cheney's influence on Weak and Stupid's commutation. The reporter says, "Did the president weigh in?"
I don't have direct knowledge, Ed, but on the other hand, the president did consult with most senior officials, and I'm sure that everybody had an opportunity to share their views.
Was it appropriate for the vice president to weigh in about the fate of his own friend and someone that who had served him for years?
I'm sure that the vice president may have expressed an opinion, but the fact is the president understands the importance. He may have recused himself. I honestly don't know.
Did he ask for the president to spare his friend?
We never, as you know, Kelly, talk about internal deliberations. Nice try.
And so it went for the entire briefing. Tony Snow refusing to answer specifics about Darth Vaney's involvement, probably because he doesn't want to lose any more of his internal organs or body fluids to Cheney's evil midnight rituals. Another reporter asked about why Scooter got such a special treatment and why the hypocrisy of Bush's claim that the 30-month sentence, which is mandated by federal law, is too severe for Scooter Libby. Reporter said officials in his own Justice Department, Tony, say normally someone would at least serve some jail time before a sentence is actually commuted. Why didn't he consult with his own Justice Department, Mr. Bush? Normally somebody at least serves a day in jail or a week in jail.
President, the jail time, in fact, was inappropriate, and therefore he decided to pursue.
Jail time was excessive. It was inappropriate.
He said it was excessive, and he thought that any jail time was excessive, and therefore he did not see fit to have Scooter Libby taken to jail. Keep in mind that Scooter Libby has been convicted of a felony. That remains the same. He has a $250,000 fine to pay. That remains the same. He's got 2 years of probation. That remains the same. A felony conviction has profound impacts on his ability to earn a living as a lawyer because he's not going to be able to practice law. So this is hardly a slap in the wrist in terms of penalty. It is a very severe penalty.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it sure is. Like he's not going to earn any money ever again for his poor wife and children. Cheney's cutting him loose. There are no book deals, no think tanks, no Halliburton, no Carlyle Group offers. Right. So there you have it. 2 years of probation. That remains the same. Okay. Come on, Judge. Judge Reggie, oh, God, I'm drawing the last name blank here. Come on, Judge. Revoke the probation. 2 years. Put this criminal slime ball in jail. Come on, Judge. Come on.
I'd like to know who leaked. And if anybody's got any information, they ought to take it to the Justice Department so we can find out the leaker.
He went to fight wars for his country and his king, of his honor and his glory. The people would sing.
You know it's hard out here for a pimp.
You ain't no
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy. When he's trying to get the money for
the ring, for the Cadillac and gas, when it's 23 past the hour. Kathy in Green Bay, Wisconsin wants to correct, and I appreciate the correction, any misapprehension we might have about Judge Walton and Libby's probation. Kathy writes, Judge Walton isn't going to revoke Scooter's probation because Bush commuted the sentence. First, there's a good argument that that would be a punishment, not for something that Libby did, but for something that someone else did, Bush. I doubt that someone not granting Libby leniency would or even could be a condition of Libby's probation. Second, I could make an argument that to try to revoke under those circumstances would be an abuse of judicial discretion. That would be appealed, and Libby would win. Judges, if they wanted to be taken seriously, don't do things that could be viewed as arbitrary or capricious. What we need to do is to see the conditions of Libby's probation. One condition may be that he not have contact with any felons or engage in illegal activity. Those could be problematic given the company he keeps. Kathy in Green Bay. Well, you know, one can hope, Kathy. Thanks. All right, back to Tony Snow today. The briefing really gets contentious now. This reporter asked twice Libby, who didn't even ask for a commutation, got such special treatment over such other cases in which the punishment of any jail time seemed excessive. Like, oh, I don't know, Martha Stewart, for example?
To think of this as the bestowal of a favor is simply utterly to misconstrue the nature and
character. Bestowal of a favor when there are dozens of other people who would probably make the same case that their sentences were too heavy and should have been commuted.
Well, I'm not sure that there are dozens of others who are. Every individual, look, it is. Yeah, well, again, there are many people who may have made cases in various junctures, but they're all different. The president looked at this one on its merits.
And then he goes on to say, was the president scared that if Scooter Libby went to jail, that he might then talk about some secrets in the White House that would damage the president? And we know that's the case, right, truth seekers? And Tony Snow answered, no, he thought it was an improper punishment. George W. Bush thought it was an improper punishment. So to hell with the judge, to hell with the jury, to hell with the legal system, to hell with the sentencing requirements, to hell with the Justice Department, to hell with all of it. And a lot of people are saying, well, this is another display of Bush's absolute and utter loyalty. No, it's not. It's another display of Bush's utter and absolute cowardice. Because short of having Irving Lewis Scooter Libby murdered, this is the only thing Bush could do to keep the little rat bastard quiet. Make sure he doesn't go to prison. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Try to stop us. No one could for long. Searchlight on my trail. Tonight's the night. All systems fail. Hey, you. Good looking female. Come in.
Hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour. Continuing with the White House press briefing today with the desperately ill Tony Snow. Now it gets a little bit even a little more grungy. This reporter, April, really pisses off Foxy the Snowman with this question about whether Joe Wilson or the American people are owed an apology. April says, Tony, the president and other White House press secretaries would not touch this question of Joe Wilson during the height of the investigation. I'm going to ask you now, since the president is now basically saying this is over and he's done what he's done. Joe Wilson asked for an apology for the American people because of the situation. Is the White House now willing to give the American people...
I'm not going to get into it.
Why not? Why not? It's over now. You didn't want to talk about it then. Let's talk about it then. Do you think the American people are owed something because of...
Number one, there is still considerable controversy about the facts of the case, including Joe Wilson's veracity.
Oh, my God.
I believe the investigation found that the White House was not the source of the breach. Number two, the president has said that it is, the president has said it's inappropriate to have such breaches.
Is the American people owed some kind of apology from someone in this administration for the leaking of a CIA person's name, personnel's name?
Yeah, it's improper to be leaking those names.
But yes, it's improper. So you say someone in this administration owes the American public an apology.
I'll apologize.
Tony. I'm
done.
No, it's not. And that's flippant. That's a very flippant way of doing something very serious. It's a very serious matter. It's very flippant.
I'll apologize. All done. My God. Things now get nasty on the issue of how Tony could say with a straight face this was not a political move on the part of the moron who occupies the office of the presidency. The question is, Tony, two-thirds of the American people say that they wanted Scooter Libby to serve his sentence, so the president has not made them happy. Conservatives wanted a full pardon, so the president has not made them happy.
Well, apparently, then he did not do this for political reasons, did he?
How could you stand there with a straight face and say that this is not a political act? What he did was inherently political.
There's political in the sense that as president, he has the authority to do this. But on the other hand, if you're doing the weather vane thing, you probably, you know, depending on which constituency you would have wanted to make happy, you would have done something differently. I am telling you that this president approaches these very carefully as a matter of principle. And the key considerations were, let's figure out what we think is appropriate, what he thinks is appropriate in terms of punishment, and let's also do it in a way that does not do violence, but in fact shows respect for a system of justice.
What?
Not going in and overthrowing the hard work and the verdict of a duly constituted jury.
What?
That, to me, demonstrates just the opposite of political consideration. This is an attempt to try to figure out a principled way of dealing with what he thought was a thorny issue.
Oh, my God. A principled way of dealing with what Bush thought was a thorny issue? It was a thorny issue because he and his criminals made it a thorny issue. Because they are the one who breached national security. They are the ones who leaked the name of a covert CIA agent. They are the ones who lied to cover it up. They are the ones who designated this poor, hapless freak, a grown man named Scooter, to be the fall guy. Oh, Tony. Tony, you are so wasting your time. Yet another feckless reporter asks about the president's hypocrisy of commuting what he considers to be an excessive sentence that was actually well within the Justice Department's federal guidelines. This reporter says, Tony, could we talk about trying to have it two ways? The president is saying that he has faith in the justice system, and yet he says what the judge did was excessive, even though it's within guidelines, according to the prosecutor.
The president has the power to commute, and he used it, and he used it in a manner that he saw fit. That's not trying to have it both ways. What the president said is that he is not going to go in and overturn what the jury did.
Oh.
On the other hand, again, he thought that the penalty was excessive. He is certainly permitted to do that. You will concede that the president does have that power constitutionally. And I guarantee you, quick show of hands, how many people in this room think that $250,000 is a wrist slap, or that 2 years in probation, or, in fact, the loss of your career is somehow a trivial punishment. This is serious punishment.
The defense fund that is going to come out $250,000. So it's not really excessive for him then.
We'll have to see $250,000,
but most average Americans don't have Fred Thompson raising millions of dollars.
He also has legal fees.
So the $250,000 is really not that much money.
I don't know. We'll have to find out. Do you think $250,000?
But just as a case, you said that it was.
It is a lot.
But he has more than $250,000.
You don't know that.
Well, in what he's raised,
Americans are generous people.
Right, I'm sorry for that. The sound gets crappy. I understand, especially when they're talking over each other like that. But the reporter is talking about how most average Americans don't have Fred Thompson raising millions of dollars in support of this thug. Snow answers, well, on the other hand, he also has legal fees. I don't know what the hell that means. That's what the money is for. And the reporter says, so the $250,000, though, is really not that much money for him. And Snow says, I don't know. You'll have to find out. Do you think $250,000, the reporter says, but that's not the case. You said that it was a lot of money. Snow says, it is a lot of money. Reporter says, but he has more than $250,000. Snow says, you don't know that. The reporter says, well, that's what's been raised. And then Snow says, well, good. Americans are generous people. The patronizing, condescending, snotty tone of Tony Snow is unbelievable. Now let's see if you can hear some of this. Last one for tonight, again on the hypocrisy of Bush pardoning this thug for his perjury, but not an obstruction, but not holding others to the same standard. So here we go. The question is, I'd like to know, Tony, if someone else perjures himself, someone unknown to the president, does the president believe that prison time for that offense is excessive?
It depends on the circumstances surrounding the case.
And so what is it about these circumstances?
Again, I'm not going to get you beyond what we've said. I'm just not going to play the game.
But is one day in prison excessive for this kind of a crime? I mean, people have spent...
This crime.
One day is too much for this particular crime?
The president decided it was too much for this one.
Why not some jail time served?
And tell me why.
It sounds to me
for obstruction of justice.
And he
so you don't think...
You're convicted of obstruction of justice.
For lying.
No, he was convicted of a... Am I right?
Oh, God. Okay, that's enough of that for tonight. And again, I realize it's hard to hear both sides of this. And I think the point that we're trying to show here is how the reporters kept hammering, even though that last round of questions, reporters sound dumber than dog snot, too, because they didn't understand. They're asking each other questions about what Libby was convicted of. I think it was perjury. Was it perjury? No, obstruction. Was it obstruction? What was it? Perjury? Pretty strange. All right, we're going to take a break here in a moment, and then we're going to come back and take phone calls. Email here from John in San Antonio. His subject line says, "People suck." And his email says, "And still, as the Constitution settles into ash, George Bush could show up at a NASCAR event and get a 5-point bump. People are stupid. I try to pull out of my coworkers and acquaintances their political views. It's scary. They're worse than sheep. They are disinformed. It is a losing battle. It is sad." John in San Antonio.
You freaking liar. Your party's going to hell in a blazing ball of fire. And you lie. You freaking liar. You freaking liar.
The world has changed after September the 11th. It's changed because we're no longer safe.
Saddam Hussein is determined to get his hands on a nuclear bomb.
Nuclear weapon.
Nuclear weapon.
Nuclear weapon.
You've lied to us, you frickin' liar. Your party's going to hell in a blazing ball of fire. And you lie, you frickin' liar, you frickin' liar.
I feel very comfortable in the job because I've got great advice and advisors to whom I get good advice from, great advisors to whom I listen.
L'état, c'est moi. All right, let's do some of your phone calls here. Let's start with Chris, who is listening on the internet, calling from Williamsport, PA. Hey, Chris.
Hi, Mike. How you doing? It's great to talk to you finally.
My pleasure.
I wanted to say before I get started that I'm a Founders Club member, and I would like to encourage everyone to do that. I listen a lot on my iPod, my car, and the quality of the podcasts that are available in the archives are fantastic.
That's great. Thank you. I'm glad you're a founding member, and also thanks for the plug.
Yeah, no problem. What I wanted to say tonight was I was thinking it would be fantastic if some of our Democratic representatives could wriggle free of the abject horror they feel the president and his cronies for a few minutes, long enough maybe to consider a constitutional amendment that would prevent the president from pardoning any members of his own administration.
Well, it would take a constitutional amendment, and there's no time to do that, of course. You understand how the Constitution is amended.
They would have to go through the thing. I'm thinking it would be a great opportunity to showcase to the American people how the soft-on-crime Republicans would kick and scream and whine and piss and moan about how they didn't want to see something like that. And we can broadcast it all over America.
Well, that's true. So in other words, you would suggest it in order to embarrass the Republicans, but in fact, you know that the process might take 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years.
It would be a win-win process either way for us.
Well, that's you're probably right. You're probably right.
All right. Yeah, that's pretty much all I had for you tonight.
And all right. Well, thanks, Chris. I appreciate you checking in. What are we supposed to say now? Have a sane and safe fourth. Have a happy and safe fourth. Thanks, Chris. Charles is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts, listening on the internet. Hey, Charles.
Hey, Mike. How are you tonight?
Doing fine. How about you?
I'm not too bad. I've got to tell you, these Republicans just—they make me sick to my stomach. It's just, oh.
I hear you.
Now, none of this should be a shock. I mean, what Bush just did shouldn't surprise anyone. After all, didn't he say the Constitution was just a piece of paper?
Yeah, he used a modifier right before he said piece of paper. But yes, you're close enough.
My gosh. Well, today I've been listening to different right-wing shows. Unfortunately, the radio here, it's mostly right-wing world, just to get their take on it. And it's astounding to me.
Yeah.
The bizarro world logic. I mean one particular show, they basically were saying Bush saved Scooter from the clutches of liberal fascists. can you believe that?
The liberal fascists?
Yes.
And, oh my God!
Yeah, and this decision will protect freedom in America. And I'm like, what are these people saying? I mean, ideologically, the right wing in this country is steadily marching towards fascism, and we on the left, I think, I mean, we're trying to save our country from madness.
But Republicans are just dumber than a rag full of snot. They really are. I'm amazed that people can listen to that garbage. Kathy will do that sometimes when she's out and about. She'll when I'm not in mm-hmm. in the car, because if I'm there, I'll listen to Sirius. I'll listen to the music, but I cannot get anywhere near AM radio because it is so filled with this puke. But to listen to these right wingers and you kind of expect it from them,
yeah.
But who are the people who listen to this garbage and believe it?
Well, many of them I think simply are uneducated. The number of inarticulate right wingers that I hear call these shows, it's extraordinary. I would like to talking to a right winger. I'd like to compare it to talking to a child, but I don't want to insult children. Just the level of naivete and the gullibility of these people. Like whatever George Bush says is fact. They don't question it. It's set in stone. And I'm like, look at this man. I mean, I lived in Australia for 4 months, and I got to see what was happening in America from an outside perspective, and it's amazing to me how much of a bubble Americans live in. I mean, this current affair with Scooter Libby, this is yet another example of Bush making not just himself but America as a whole a laughingstock, basically.
It's true, and I've come to realize from having hosted talk radio programs for the past two decades.
Yeah.
That there is a huge segment. I don't think it's the majority of Americans, but it's a huge minority that wants to be told how to think. That wants to have decision making taken away from them. That wants to follow in lockstep because they're terrified, utterly and absolutely terrified of independent thought, of making a decision that the rest of the herd may boo them about. And this is the typical Republican. It's the typical conservative. They are terrified of their own shadows.
Mm-hmm.
They will follow anyone who sounds like a boss, who will tell them what to do, what to think, when to get up, when to go potty, when to go to bed, not unlike a three-year-old. And I think that I live in a country whose body politic contains a huge chunk of people who think that way. I just wonder how in the hell we've not gone into total fascism before now. But we're damn sure on our way.
We are certainly headed there. One last thing. I had a fascinating chat with a right winger, who I'm convinced she was completely insane, but she intrigued me because she suggested what we need in this country is a freedom police to go after the enemies of freedom, and it sounded so much like the Gestapo, and there she was, though, covered with her American flag pins and support the troops, but she was calling for the arrest of liberals. Anyone who speaks out against the government is an enemy of freedom. And I'm like, this country was built on freedom.
Anyone who speaks out against the government is an enemy of freedom. Oh,
yeah.
My God, that is so Soviet Union.
Yeah. And with the 4th of July coming tomorrow, I remember last year some very crusty conservatives were saying the 4th of July is not the time to criticize the president.
I'm like, that is the time.
I know, exactly.
Oh, my God. I mean, that is precisely the time.
I mean, it's the day that celebrates a revolution against the government, an armed uprising.
All right, I'll tell you what, Charles, listen, coming back right after the break because we're going to have a montage on freedom. And thanks for checking in, pal. I got to leave it there. I appreciate what you had to say. We'll take a break and come back. Yeah, the 4th of July is not the time to criticize the president. Oh, period. My, period. God, period. 7 past the hour. Welcome back. What is the story? A New York City man held for reciting the First Amendment, Reverend Billy, performance artist, was arrested on harassment charges while reciting the First Amendment through a megaphone at Manhattan's Union Square. Reverend Billy was joined by women in red choir robes who sang a hymn version of the amendment, which guarantees freedom of speech. Other activists distributed an amateur videotape of his arrest, eyes closed and hands raised. The pretend pastor whooped, "Bill of Rights, hallelujah." All right, we don't have Reverend Billy here, but we have a montage of what is it, Kathy? Open your mic. This is a surprise for me.
Yeah, well, this is something that our own very own Duffy with the Novam Radio Network, one of our many, many talented folks in production at the home office, put together in honor of the 4th of July, and it has to do with freedom and JFK.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings.
My country is of the sweet land of liberty. Of thee I sing.
We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweigh the dangers which are cited to justify it.
Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrims' pride, from every mountain side.
And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment.
Let freedom ring. Let freedom ring. Let it ring.
Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it.
Thanks to Duffy for putting that together. It's about 10 past the hour. All right, back to your phone calls. Ivy is calling from KPHX in Phoenix. Hey, Ivy, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going today? Happy 4th.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, let's put Ivy on hold. And I'll tell you what, Ian, back at the home office, if you can tell Ivy that he either has to get on a different phone or something. Francisco is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Hey, Francisco, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Mike. Oh, man. First-time caller, I mean, long-time listener. Oh.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you. I've been listening to the a lot of the I've been listening to AM 940 in all the different programs that they have here, and about the callers that they call in that about the leaving that didn't do nothing wrong, that these right wingers always call and say that Libby basically didn't do nothing wrong. But I mean, what would happen to me if I would lie? I mean,
excuse me.
Oh, exactly. To an FBI person. I mean, I'm just putting in a term where
you'd go to jail.
Exactly. I mean, and these people that just call. I mean, just spewing all the right wingers' talking point. I said, what? I mean, maybe they could put it in words where maybe a 5-year-old can understand. Maybe they'll probably get it. Maybe they have to probably be in that situation. But
hey. No, I'll tell you, Francisco. In my opinion, anyone who claims that Libby has gotten a bad deal is an uninformed jackass and probably has had his or her brains absolutely fried by right-wing talk radio. Right-wing talk radio is truly the most the programs put out by these right-wingers. People like Hannity and the rest of them, Hugh Hewitt and Limbaugh, of course, those programs are designed to render Americans ripe for a takeover by fascism. And they have done a damn good job in the past 15 years. America right now is so close to a fascist takeover, not from outside, but from inside. The threat has always been regarding fascism from inside this country, going all the way back to the turn of the last century. So the right-wing talk show hosts that you're talking about have been a third column, hell-bent on destroying representative government, hell-bent on destroying freedom and liberty, and they have had the audacity to present themselves as guardians of freedom. Well, in the meantime, these moles who listen to right-wing talk radio, who cannot see the light, whose ears are full of mud, whose mouths can't speak anything except what they hear the right-wingers talk about, they are responsible, these right-wing talk show hosts, for bringing this country to the verge of the end of representative government. And I say, when we finally do have to move to the fourth box, the three previous, you know, the boxes are soap, ballot, jury, and ammo. Use them in that order in the defense of liberty. And when we finally move to the fourth box, I've already got dibs on about five of these radio talk show people that I'm going to go find and have a nice, quiet conversation with. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
So I hear what you're saying about right-wing talk show hosts. They are destructive, they are evil, they are a bigger enemy to threat and enemy to this country than any Islamist terrorist cell could possibly be, because these people have been eating at the foundation of America for the past 15 years, and there has to be an accounting against these guys at some point. There has to be.
That's true. That's so true.
Well, go ahead, Francisco.
Oh yeah, one more thing. I had an in-law that just moved here to Miami, Florida, from New Jersey, and he always listens to Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly, and he tells me that, I'm trying to tell him. I mean, I'm trying to convert him to just listen to AM 940. I mean, it's okay if he listens to, if he can always go back and forth, but I mean, I don't care.
Right.
But he just tells me this. This is the reason, why he's Republican, because, he did get brainwashed. He just comes and tells me, we can't let these liberals, be always be in charge of the country, or else there'll be a lot of gay people getting married, and there'll be a lot of abortions going on. And I said,
Have you asked him where all the liberals are in charge of the country? Where does that exist?
Mm.
Just ask him that. See what he says. And as far as abortions are concerned, there have been abortions in this country since this country was this country. Abortions are nothing new. Matter of fact, they go back a couple of thousand years. There are pictographs, hieroglyphics in ancient Egyptian pyramids that depict abortions. What the hell does he's your relative?
Well, he's an in-law.
Okay, well, I hope you can rescue him. But I would say this, Francisco, don't waste a lot of time, because at a certain point, and it sounds like your relative, your in-law, has reached that point, they're so far around the bend and over the edge, they're unsavable. I got to leave it there. Thanks, Francisco. Take care. We'll talk again.
I need my conscience to keep watch over me, to protect me from myself, so I can wear honesty like a crown on my head when I walk into the promised land. We've been too long, American dreaming.
Coming to America, got a dream to take them there. Become
lot of problems. But I'm going to tell you something about this country. In my mind, there is no doubt that we won't solve these problems. And we stand together to win the war against terrorism. Our country is strong.
Oh, shut up!
None of us will ever forget this day.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Somebody put a sock in it. Back to your phone calls. Caroline is calling from KPHX and listening on KPHX, I should say, in Tempe, Arizona. Hey, Caroline.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing?
Doing fine.
You know, when I was listening to the reporters and Snow with his, you know, hearing there, one word I just didn't hear was felony.
Felony.
Yeah. Lying to Congress. It's not just a law, a lie. It's a felony.
Yeah.
Lying to a grand jury is a felony.
That's right.
And then you've got Snow saying that Bush has determined that one day considering the crime, even one day in jail, is too much.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? They are lowering the bar. So, you know, what I expect, it's like those reporters, I mean, they were kind of shocked at the suggestion that, well, are you saying lying is okay? But that didn't even quite hit it. And I don't know, I think maybe we need some new words. We've been telling them for 6 years that if his mouth is moving, he's lying.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, we've said liar, 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 lying, lying. It just doesn't mean anything anymore. And so I'm starting to wonder, would not lying to any jury be a felony too? Or does it have to be a grand jury?
I don't know. Perjury, if you're lying to a jury, that means you're providing false testimony. That's perjury.
Yeah.
And I would assume that is a felony, yeah. If you lie to a grand if you lie to a grand jury or the FBI, you are subject to immediate
they haul
jailing.
You off.
Sure, they haul you off.
Well, you know, I don't know, maybe what we maybe what we need is to remind people what misdemeanors really are.
Yeah.
And then say, okay, here's the definition of a misdemeanor. Here's the definition of a felony. Now, what did Libby do? A misdemeanor or B, a felony?
It wouldn't work because... The people who support Cheney and Bush and Libby and would say, well, your question is wrong. No crime was committed. Why are you asking me? And they would ignore you and tell you better get right with Jesus or you're going to burn in hell.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm starting to maybe what we need more immigrants.
We
need more immigrants. They've read the Constitution. They know what it means. They appreciate it.
That's true. That's true.
They, you know, my God, they're so proud. You know, they're so proud. They think they've arrived to the, I have to wonder, what do they think now?
I hear you.
After they see what they've seen, they think they've arrived in the promised land and they, you know, they learn the Constitution. They know what it means. They get here and they, you know, and then Bush.
And then they see this.
Sure. And then what do they think? I'm starting to think what we need is we need to give a test to all these pasty cockroaches. And if they can't pass the test on the Constitution, then they need to be deported. I don't know who would take them. The Iraqis would take them.
Now, wait, you're talking about good white people?
Oh, yes.
Oh, you're talking about...
Oh, yes, indeedy.
Citizens.
Pasty cockroaches, yes.
Pasty cockroaches.
Well, when you look at Libby, these people, you look at all of them. You look at Libby. You look at these hideous, deformed. You know, you can see... hate to say it, but I mean, I swear to God, you can see it on their face. These people they put, and these are the big ones, you know, the ones they put on TV.
Mm-hmm.
All these neocons. They all look like they have lived under a rock for the past 20 years.
They do indeed.
They do.
Carolyn, you've given me some images to play with here during the break. Thanks a lot.
Have fun.
I appreciate you checking in. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Steps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts, while all around me a voice was sounding, this land was made
oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountain majesties above the fruited plain.
And the goals for this country are a compassionate American for every single citizen.
I want one. I'm a citizen. I want a compassionate American. We used to call that slavery, George. God damn it.
With brotherhood from sea to
shining sea. Who is that, Bing Crosby? Oh, my God. It's about 25 before the hour. Don't forget, tomorrow night, there is a rebroadcast of one of our programs. An encore presentation, as our CIO at Nova M, Billy Foster, likes to say. An encore presentation. Yeah, okay. I call it a rebroadcast, and then we'll be back. We'll be back Thursday for sure. And again, a week from Thursday, filling in for me will be Sam Cedar, while I'm on my way to Seattle for an event sponsored by KTPK, our affiliate in Seattle. Sam Cedar on the Nova M Radio Network, huh? All right, back to phone calls here. Steve is calling from, no, that's Dave. Let's put Dave back on hold and go to Steve is calling from Folsom, California, listening on KSAC. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Yeah, I sent you an email the other day about, we talked a little bit about impeachment and why the Dems don't want to go through that, because basically what do they get out of it? But one of the things you're doing I think is great is joining the dots here. And the right wing, extreme right wing, has been trying to get power in this country for 30 years. They finally got it under Bush. That final dot is they're not going to want to give up in 08. We still don't know who their candidate precisely is going to be, but after holding power all this time, we're talking about due process, voting, elections. I don't know if you've read Greg Palast's stuff, but they are not going to give up power that easily, no matter how bad things get.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that you hear I'm talking to the righties talking about a lot is comparing this thing with Libby to Clinton, when it's more like Haldeman or Ehrlichman. You know,
yeah,
Haldeman.
Sure.
Yeah, Haldeman served, I don't know if you talked about this, he served an 18-month prison sentence.
Yes.
I think Ehrlichman did a couple years. I can't remember what E. Howard Hunt and G. Gordon Liddy did, but they all served prison time.
Yeah.
For the same exact, very close, the same...
yeah, obstruction of justice, lying to the FBI, and a couple of them served time for lying to Congress, I believe. But you're absolutely right. But that was then. This is now.
Right.
These are the same people who tried to remove Bill Clinton from office because he may have lied during a deposition in a civil case that was brought by a woman who apparently was a liar. Her case was eventually dismissed. Maybe there was some sort of settlement with Paula Jones. Was there, Kathy? I don't remember any longer because, like Bush says, that's so long ago it's almost ancient history. But Clinton was indicted by the U.S. House of Representatives with these hypocritical little rat bastards, all of whom were involved in the perjury before God because they were breaking their marriage vows with their own little tawdry affairs. The whole Clinton thing was so disgusting to me, but the hypocrisy. You see, the Republican Party is based in hypocrisy, lies, and deceit. So it's not surprising that they come out like this about Libby.
Well, the thing is that it's about obfuscation, blurring the lines, diverting attention, diversion, confusion. I mean, that's what they thrive on, and putting Clinton out there is, it's what they've done for 6 years, and they still seem to be getting away with it.
Yeah.
But the thing is, when they bring this up, there was Haldeman, Ehrlichman, G. Gordon Liddy, E. Howard Hunt. There were all the pardons that Bush the first did, which I think you've talked about. But the important point I was trying to make is that you're joining the dots here that these people have held power, and I'm talking about the extreme right wing, for so long, you know, I think you refer to 1994, the Gingrich thing, but since Watergate, they've been trying to get where they are today since Watergate. They are there. And to point out that they're not going to give power up that easily, what will they do next? They don't seem to have a candidate that, to replace Bush. Obviously Cheney's not going to run. But you can bet they're just not going to give up easily, and that's one of the things I wanted to mention. The other was about this what you mentioned about Joe Wilson. Joe Wilson had said in an interview with Charles Goyette on anti-war radio, Joe Wilson had said in his interview with Charles Goyette, I think really they're trying to protect themselves, which is what you said earlier. They are trying to protect themselves. Libby may have been, he was assigned a prisoner number, he was about to be confined in prison. He may have been on the verge of talking. Even if he wasn't on the verge, I'm sure they suspected that he could talk, and of course they wanted to keep him quiet.
Right, and there's two ways to do that, commute his sentence or have him killed.
Well, yeah.
And for some reason they picked commutation. I think it would have been just as easy for anyone in the Bush crime family. Hell, they could have gotten G. Gordon Liddy to leave his radio program and go strangle the guy someplace in a dark alley. But
Howard Hunt, if he were still alive.
Yeah, if he were still alive. Well, go ahead, Steve.
But the thing is that even if we go up even to a higher bird's eye view here of this whole situation, Bush himself, Cheney is, you know, obviously he's very unpopular with the public. But Bush always had that popularity. Obviously, he's very, very unpopular now. There's a point where he becomes a real liability to his party. I mean, not just an annoyance like he seems to be, has been for the past couple of years, but he's going to be a real, real liability. Can you imagine Bush appearing in the Republican National Convention of 2008 and endorsing a candidate? It's
No.
going to be impossible for him to do that.
It
They're
is.
Either going to have to silence him, or, you know, something, there's some way they've got to put forward a new power broker, and that's, I think, what we have yet to see.
All right.
Could I say just one more thing about this thing in the UK?
Yeah, go ahead.
They're saying conspiracy. They're indicting these guys, trying these guys before there's even been a trial. They're saying, oh, they're going to blow everything up. But the thing is, they're asking us to believe these conspiracies, and yet when we say, hey, look, Bush is trying to protect himself. Obviously, there's a conspiracy at the highest levels of executive government. Oh, you're just a conspiracy theorist. That's crazy. We're not going to listen to you. And yet they're throwing at us all of these ridiculous, you know, teenagers attacking Fort Dix. All of these things that they're throwing at us, they're saying, believe our conspiracies, but we're sure not going to believe your conspiracies.
It's crazy talk, Steve. It's crazy talk. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Mike.
Appreciate you checking in. And now British authorities are warning media not to make the assumption that these foiled bombing attacks in the UK were the result of something by Al-Qaeda. They're trying to make that clear. Earlier tonight, I read an email from Kathy in Green Bay, Wisconsin, who was talking about Judge Walton is not going to revoke Scooter Libby's probation because Bush commuted the sentence. And she made some salient points that I thought, you know, rang very, very true. But now I get something from Ellie, who says, Mike, I don't think it's realistic to try to corral us all into law school issues, referring to Kathy's email. And Ellie writes, rather, it just seems totally appropriate to speak the language of the sheep, so-called, by pointing out the filthy mind and slimy imagination of this man, Scooter, who decided to use, who decided a good use of his time while on our payroll was to publish a work of fiction that should stand the hair on end of all the stamp-out smut and entertainment types on the right. Why not emphasize this element of the man's life? Just wondering, Ellie. Happy Fourth. Yeah, I appreciate both points of view here, Ellie, the law school point of view and yours. So I like what Kathy wrote and I like what you wrote. I get it. But there are two levels here, right? There are two levels. And you, Ellie, are going for the gut level, and Kathy was going for the head level, and I appreciate that. I think it's great. I'm thrilled that people listen to this program who can approach it on both levels. Thank you. Kathy also writes, you want some hope? Here it is. First, Bush commuted the sentence saying that he agreed that Libby was guilty. After all, he said that he respected the jury's verdict. That respect demanded that he accept it. And second, and this is from commentisfree.guardian.co.uk, the Guardian of London. And it says here, yesterday George Bush attempted to prevent the chain of events from continuing any further. He commuted Scooter Libby's 30-month sentence. And it goes on, and it says, Libby's commutation is nothing short of another obstruction of justice. And Kathy writes, if the commutation is another obstruction of justice, then Bush is the felon this time. Before the hour, thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program and handled your calls in Phoenix at KPHX, our flagship station. Thanks also to Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Billy Foster is the moderator at NovamRadio.com in the chat room. Also thanks to Mark Marshall and the militant mods at MikeMolloy.com on the message board. Catherine Bay is the executive producer of this program. Again, we'll be off tomorrow night to go watch some fireworks and maybe see the northern half of the state of Georgia set on fire because of the idiots who run around in this state with their Confederate decals on the backs of their trucks going, hey, son of a bitch, watch this one! Oh, damn, look! I'll set fire to that whole field over there! Woo, lordy! Woo-wee! South's gonna rise again! Huh?
Yeah.
What?
That reminds me of some kind of Southern joke. I think it was a Jeff Foxworthy joke about what's a redneck's last words?
What? What is the redneck's last words?
Hey, hold my beer while you watch me do this.
Oh, that's a good one. So we will be out watching the fireworks tomorrow night, trying to avoid massive forest fires. And what is it called now? Not a rebroadcast, but a encore performance of the Molloy program. All right, let's see if we can squeeze in another call here. Who do we have who's willing to put up with this? Carlos is calling from New Jersey, who's listening on the Internet. Hey, Carlos.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm fine.
Good.
Yeah, I'm from Jersey, West Orange.
Yeah?
Yeah. I was listening to your show and thinking to myself, wow, it's great to listen to Mike Molloy. I'm a little bit frustrated, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. But thank you for saying it's nice to listen to the program. I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. We don't have you out here, but, you know, on the Internet, I listen to you every night.
Well, thank you.
What I was thinking to say is that I'm a little bit frustrated, but I listen to the people and I say to myself, well, they don't really understand what's going on out here, you know?
Yeah.
Well, there's a book out there called Whistling Past Dixie. Do you know about it?
I've heard of it. Yes.
Yeah, it's a book about 13 or the 11 states in the South that states that those states are lost to the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And the other states, well, they can go blue or red any other time, you know?
Yeah.
So I had so much to say, man, that my mind is getting a little bit loose over here, you know?
Yeah, right. That happens to me every night.
I'm telling you, I'm glad you putting up with me.
That's but all right. Go ahead, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Mike.
All right, we'll just take a deep breath and relax and just tell me one thing at a time. I know you got a lot of stuff on your mind, but just tell me one thing at a time. Just pick one and talk about it. Go ahead.
Well, the guy was talking about how it is that we can try to take back America.
Right.
But the thing is that. Most of the country outside of the South mm-hmm. can go either way, you know?
Yeah, that's...
I live in New Jersey, and right. New Jersey can go either way, you know?
Right.
I mean, we had Whitman out here, you know, and for a while, and, you know, she's head of the EPA
mm-hmm.
and went under the Bush administration, and, you know, so Jersey and New York, you know, if I lived in New York. I was from Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I lived in New York for 30 years before I came here to Jersey.
Right.
And you know, New York is, you know, it had a Republican governor and it has a Republican president. I mean, I'm a mayor, and before that, another Republican mayor. So
well, Carlos, you know that Bloomberg is not really a Republican.
He was a Democrat, yeah.
Yeah, he just switched to be a Republican so he could win in the primary and then go on to become mayor. And now he's given up his Republican Party affiliation, declared himself an independent. But I understand. Yeah. I understand what you're saying. The South, sadly, is kind of lost. They had a Democratic governor over here in Alabama who just got sentenced to 7 years in prison thanks to Karl Rove and these filthy federal prosecutor pukes. But the South is, for the time being, totally lost to the Democratic process. If people down here just want to raise their hands to Jesus and let fascism roll over them like a mighty river, and so they don't have to make any decisions in life or in death. All they can do, all they want to do is say, you know, Jesus will take care of me after I die. George Bush will take care of me while I still think I'm alive. And they're happy with that, Carlos. So, you know, but I understand what you're saying. Listen, I'm glad you called in. This is your first time calling. I know you got a little bit nervous. Don't worry about it. We'll talk again the next time you call in. All right? All right, Carlos. And then we inadvertently cut him off before he's ready to say goodbye. Carlos. All right, we're gonna leave you with one of my favorite songs that always reminds me of the Bush administration. I hope you have a safe holiday. I mean that, all right? Take care. Watch out. Keep it lit. Okay? I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.